she's won't be here with us tonight. We have all of the board members here and Superintendent Citrude and Jared Black, administrator. We're glad to see you here as well. Thank you for coming to our board meeting tonight. We will begin by standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Our first item of business is swearing in of re-elected board members, which is, we are so glad they're here. one more term.
Where do you want to do this? Just where you're standing or?
Sure.
Okay.
Yes?
Yeah.
This one's for me.
Unless you'd like us to stand on a chair or on one of the
Well, yeah.
Where is the throne?
Maybe I'll stand over here.
Okay.
Everyone's way. So, okay. I'll need you to raise your right arms and repeat after me. I, and then state your name.
I, Roy Diamond Johnson.
Having been elected to the office of school board member.
Having been elected to the office of school board member.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution.
That I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution.
Of the United States.
Of the United States.
And the Constitution of this state.
And the Constitution of this state.
And that I will discharge.
And that I will discharge.
The duties of my office with fidelity.
The duties of my office with fidelity.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. I don't know if they want to admit how many years they've been here, but we're glad they're here. The next item is election of board officers. Nominations are open for president of the school board.
I would like to nominate Laurel Johansson as president.
Second.
Any other nominations? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you for that confidence. I appreciate that. Elections are open for, nominations are open for election of the vice president.
I make a motion that we elect Roy Dehat.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right.
Don't have to change the station.
Then we don't have to change the station. That's right. Budget conscious.
We just ordered like 1,000 new pages. Thank you.
Give one of those to Roy. In case you're interested, you can let me know.
Okay. What am I doing with my?
Oh, your agenda.
Oh, vice president. Yeah. Okay. Also, it is time to the appointment of business administrator. I just need to say that we have complete confidence in Jared Black. He has done a great job for the school district. He has, he and his staff have won several awards for their competency and for the way they do the financial business of the district. And we have every bit of confidence in the job that he does.
And I would like to make a motion that we appoint him as business administrator. Again, saying how much we appreciate the integrity and honesty and efficiency with which he and his department handle the financial affairs.
I second that.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? You were really nervous down there, weren't you, Jared?
He was hoping you'd let him vote, but
no chance.
I could be unemployed by the end of the night, so thank you.
We have with us Craig Smith. He for the tax increment financing for the refinery, Green River City.
Great. Are you ready for me to?
Yeah.
Do it?
Just do it.
We also recognize that we have the mayor of Green
yes,
River
I'm
here
sorry.
Also.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Come with me.
Where she used to sing as a teacher.
Yes, right.
This will be brief. So I, but if you have questions as we go along, the purpose of the meeting today is to educate you on this concept of tax increment financing. It's been done a lot of other places in Utah, but it's never been done before So the idea is so you understand it. At the next meeting, we're going to ask you to do something about it. Hopefully, we'll be ready to do something about it. But not tonight. All you just have to do is listen and learn. My name's Craig Smith. I'm an attorney. I practice out of Salt Lake City, but all around the state of Utah. Represent a number of entities on all kinds of different things. But one of the things we do is community development and law, or what's commonly been known as redevelopment law. We represent a lot of redevelopment agencies throughout the state of Utah. About 2 years ago, I was approached by Green River City when this idea about a refinery coming to Green River City was first kind of percolating. And I met with Green River City and did a presentation like this one with the city council team, and then we created a redevelopment agency. It's a separate legal entity that cities and counties can create to do economic development work. And the major source of funding that is available through the redevelopment process. They don't have any power. Agencies have no power to assess taxes. They can't raise taxes. They can't lower taxes. It's tax increment financing. And that's what I'm going to explain tonight, because that involves property taxes, which obviously involves school districts. You get the lion's share of the property tax. But it's a tool that's used, you know, pretty commonly throughout the state of Utah and around the country. Let's go to the next slide. There's some benefits. You can fund economic development or urban renewal. Urban renewal is like the elimination of blight in kind of downtown areas. What we're doing here is an economic development project, and we'll talk a little bit about that. And it allows you to use a portion of the new and additional tax revenues to encourage development. The tax revenues that are being paid now from the project area that we're talking about, and I gave you a map that kind of outlines where the proposed project area is. We're also doing an annexation of that. And it's not in the materials. It's a separate piece. You can make sure you
read this. Yes.
And I think you probably know basically where it is. If not, either Mr. Hatter or me can probably tell you. Is to use that for to help spur the economic development. Let's go to the next slide. There are a number of things that under Utah law you can do with tax increment financing. One, the most common thing is to fund infrastructure improvements. For example, in this area that we're hoping to have the refinery in, that's starting to be constructed very shortly, that area needs a water line, and that's probably one of the main things we're going to seek to do with our tax increment is to do a water line. I mean, business development grants, demolition, property tax rebates. I worked on the Old Geneva Steel Project area, and in that area, a lot of it's environmental remediation because there's a lot left to clean up from the Old Geneva Steel that everybody's familiar with. You can buy land, you can do all kinds of things, but we'll likely do. The most common thing is infrastructure, and that's likely what we'll do here. Let's go ahead and go to the next slide. People say, well, why do you have to spend public dollars for a private business? People ask that question. Well, the answer to that question is because if you don't, someone else will, and they'll get the business. It's a competitive world out there, and whenever we compete with other states, that's why we have the Governor's Office of Economic Development. They offer state incentives. That's why we have the Economic Development Corporation of Utah. They do that as well. I've worked on a number of projects where we have competed with other states to bring a new business into Utah, because obviously new businesses employ people, pay taxes, do those things. This is the tool that the legislature has given cities and counties to use as the tax increment tool, and this is what we do with it. A lot of other states have that same tool. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Here's the process that we go through. One is you create an agency, and we've created one. Green River has an agency. That's all it has right now. Again, that's a separate legal entity, and the reason that's important is for a couple reasons. One is agencies can do things that have some ability to do things that cities can't do or counties can't do. They also can't do some other things. Also, it protects. It's a separate entity, so that it's not the city of Green River that's putting itself out on the line here for anything that we agree to or do. Next step is to attract some development, because if you don't have somebody that's willing to come and spend money and build things and start a business, you can't do anything, because this is a process that only works on performance. If there is nothing built, or if there's no taxes paid, there's no increment. The increment is the increase in the property taxes because you're building things, not from tax raises, but because you're building things and making land more valuable. So if you're not making land more valuable, there's no funds. If for some reason somebody doesn't pay their taxes, there's no funds. You know, hopefully people usually pay their taxes sooner or later. And then the third thing is you create a project area. This is the third step. And that's a step we're just undertaking right now. Tomorrow night, Green River will pass a resolution. Green River Agency, Redevelopment Agency, will pass a resolution to start that process. And it's a couple-month process. It is a public process, and we'll hold hearings and put notices and things like that. Let's go to the next slide. And here's how it works. Obviously, we have our base property taxes for that area. It's not very high because the land's unimproved. Go to the next. You have your tax increment is when you improve it, build buildings, whatever, in this case a refinery, and then you go ahead and do the next one. So you do those things, you get higher taxes, and then you use some or all of that increase in the property tax to fund what you're trying to do. And you say, well, how can you do that? Because that money comes in over a number of years, obviously. Well, most times, the way that I typically like to see it done, and I try to get my clients, agents I work for, do, is what we will do is try to get the refinery to do as much up front as it has, and then we will have what's called a participation agreement, and over the years, as tax dollars come in, they'll get paid back for some of the extra costs they have. For example, talk about infrastructure. We're gonna hopefully build that line big enough for, water line big enough for other businesses to locate in that area, too. One of the first project areas I worked on when I started doing this stuff was down in Hurricane, and it's that Walmart distribution center. You've all seen it. If you've ever driven to St. George, you've driven by it. That was done through tax increment financing. We had to extend a water line and sewer line to that site to do that. But now when you drive by, you see there's a number of other businesses there because obviously you use this as a catalyst to get things started. And, you know, it's kind of like the concept of a mall. If somebody builds a Target store, then other people come want to locate around it. Well, it's the same thing we think will happen with this, and we'll try to do that. Let's go to the next slide. There are three types of projects that we can create. The type of project we are doing here is a community development project area, and there's a couple reasons why we're doing that, and I'll explain that in a minute. We could do, for this project, we could do either an economic development project area or a community development project area. They both end up get us in the same endpoint. It's just simpler to do the community development project here for what we're doing. Let's go to the next one. Obviously, urban renewal is what people think of when they think of redevelopment. That's where you take blighted areas, use that money to make them nicer. This is actually, the second picture is actually a project I worked on up in West Bountiful. I think the first picture we just found somewhere. I don't think that's really, West Bountiful isn't quite that bad. Economic development, take open land like we're doing here and do something that has employment. I've worked on lots of different projects all around the state. Some you might be familiar with. I worked on the Box Elder, up in Box Elder County on the Procter & Gamble facility there. Okay. Geneva Steel, lots of other ones. Community development, you can do as a little more flexibility. As I said, we're starting a process that's a 2 to 5 month process. We're going to try to do it in 2 months because we're finally got, they're ready to go. I mean, it's like any other project. We've been kind of circling around for a couple of years, as the mayor knows. And then we met with the refinery folks just before the holidays in December, and they said, you know, why haven't you got this done? I mean, let's get it done. And so they're ready to move. My understanding is they want to start building in March, so they're anxious to move forward. And this is an important component, this financing to do this water line and some other things are part of what they need to be done. So, that's the, you know, there's, you go through a process. Where the school district comes in and where the school board comes in is the agency has no right to pledge anybody else's tax increment. We can pledge the city can pledge its own tax increment, which it will do. The county can pledge its tax increment, and for the school district's part, which is the biggest part, the school district has to pledge its tax increment. So you have to agree to us doing this with that money. Again, it'll be a percentage of the increase in taxes for a specific length of time, and we will end up hopefully with an interlocal agreement that spells that all out that you will sign and the agency will sign, and it'll all be in writing as lawyers like to have things, and that's how we'll do it. So we can't force you into it. We can't say, well, we're going to do this without you. If you don't want to do it for some reason, think it's a bad idea, you could just tell us no, and we can't do the project, and we can't take your tax increment. frankly, without the school district's part, you're, like I say, you're the lion's share. You're, I don't know, was it here, 55, 60% of the property taxes is school district? That's about what it is around the state. And the rest is divided to the other ones. Go ahead. And we will have that, a budget. So, as I was saying, for community development, we negotiate an interlocal agreement with your tax agency. So we will prepare a draft agreement. We'll provide it to you. We'll have your attorney, whoever, I don't know who your attorney is, but we'll find out who that is. Have your attorney look at it, make sure they're comfortable with it. And then in a public meeting, we will ask to have the school board approve through a resolution approving that interlocal agreement. I'm assuming you've done interlocal agreements with other governmental entities, and you're a little bit familiar with it, of that process. And that's the exact same process we'll file for interlocal agreements. Go ahead and go to the next one. If we were doing a TEC, an economic development project area, we'd have to form a committee, and that's why we're kind of avoiding this, because that takes some more time and will take some more things. We're not doing that. But that's another way we could do it, and you'd still have a lot of say in it because you would have two members put on that TEC committee. Just a couple of examples of projects I worked on. This is where the Young Subaru is up in South Ogden. That's what it was before. It was a something got broke there, and it was kind of, and we were able to use tax increment to help bring the Young Subaru dealership into South Ogden. Go ahead, go to the next one. Project we just got done. You say, well, maybe this is just for big cities, but we just did three projects in Beaver County and three projects in Iron County for solar facilities. Now, that doesn't create many jobs, but it does create some, bring some good value and does some good things. And so we were able to take a percentage of that increase. Obviously, where you can see where that solar facility is, there's, we're taking basically bare ground that has nothing on it. It's not being irrigated, nothing happening with it, and making it very valuable. So obviously, there's a lot of tax increment, and we're using a portion of that for a period of years to, as an to help to bring that to happen. And these things are being built as we speak. Done a lot of projects with South Jordan. Most of eBay has a big data processing facility with tax increment financing. That's huge. I don't know if that really shows how big it is. That's only one of the things Rio Tinto built. They also, in the project area, built their new headquarters for the Kennecott facility and everything here. Again, that was done through tax increment. And frankly, you go up to Salt Lake, come up to Salt Lake, and I'll show you around town, and almost anything big that's built in Salt Lake, they use tax increment financing. It's not like they never, it's just part of the funding they use. For example, the Energy Solutions Arena is in a redevelopment project area. It was built with tax increment financing. And that's the presentation. I'm happy to try to answer any questions you have. Like I said, we have nothing for you to approve tonight, but we hope at your next meeting, your February meeting, we'll have the information to you, have a proposed interlocal agreement, have all the numbers so you can see. We're still finalizing those right now, of how much, how long, and what percentage of the tax increment we think we're going to need to be able to do the things that we need to do to make this thing happen. I don't want to spend any more of the public's money than I need to make this happen, but I do want to make it happen because, right now we're getting nothing from that property. I don't know what the taxes are, probably $10 or something, because it's just bare ground. Yeah. So that's the process. I wanted to make sure that this group understood this process because we're asking you to participate with us and vote in favor of it. And I wouldn't expect you to vote for anything you didn't understand what you were voting for. And as I said, this is the first one in Emory County, so no one's been through this process here. Other places, they've been through it dozens of times and they've seen these a lot. But, the ones we did, for example, Beaver, the projects we just did in Beaver were the first ones ever in Beaver. But it's that's the tool. That's what I'm here to hopefully do. Does anybody have any questions or comments or anything they'd like to talk about further? If not, I'll sit down and go on with the rest of your meeting.
I do. I just wonder how many jobs this will bring into the area. Do you have any idea of that?
Right now, they're looking at between 100 and 150.
Okay.
Once
long term.
There's three phases. One is the first is a railroad.
Mm-hmm.
Then the sweet oil refinery. And then they're going to do a black oil refinery.
Will it go increase as they do the different
yes.
projects? Okay.
Yeah.
But you're figuring 150 jobs after post-construction.
Total. Yeah.
Okay.
Will those
Absolutely.
People stay those 150, or is it they'll come in and
most, I would say probably, from what I've heard, maybe 10 is going to be from the company, Rock River itself, to run it. But everybody else is going to be hired from within our counties.
Permanency.
Permanent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Permanent positions, yeah.
Yeah, these are
permanent positions.
Permanent
and
high-paying jobs.
Because of the help that they're getting from the state, one of the requirements is that they have to pay a much higher wage. So they're starting at, like, if I'm not mistaken, at least $20 an hour.
And that's another point. They have qualified for some state incentives as well. To get state incentives, you also have to have a local match. It's not a dollar-for-dollar match, so we don't have to match dollar-for-dollar, but the state requires that the local entities do something to be part of the, and this will qualify for our local match to make the state money work as well.
So
I'm assuming you have the water.
Yes.
They approve that.
And that is one of the final things we're working on. We have the water. It will come out of the Green River. And so the process we're doing now is trying to figure out exactly what size we can put all the way up to this site.
Okay, you don't have to do anything to make it drinkable or?
No.
Okay.
And they're going to have a $500,000 gallon tank on site.
For fire.
Because they have to have enough water for fire suppression.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so we need to get the water to them. But we also want it big enough, as Craig mentioned, to support the other businesses that are going to come along with the refinery.
Yeah, the project area we have is larger than just the refinery footprint. It's only part of that. The idea is to, again, improve that whole area and to attract hopefully some other businesses and make this a catalyst for, you know, something that I don't think Green River's had anything like this since the missile.
No.
Thing back in the 60s. So.
And you said March, possibly.
Yeah, they're chomping at the bit and they're ready to go.
Great.
They've got everything done, and they're engineering, and they've worked with UDOT to get their egress ready to go, and the railroad. And to go along with that employment question, what they told me was that when you build a refinery, you know, that brings in two or three other types of businesses
mm-hmm.
to
support business.
The refinery. So. It will be more than that.
And when we were talking to the CEO of the company, also said that they had been approached by several other companies that have nothing to do with the oil refinery that are eager to use the rail spur for other purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So at the beginning, it was an oil refinery with a railroad on the side. Now, actually, it's a railroad business with the refinery on the side, and they are extremely excited about getting that railroad in and going because of that.
Yeah. The water that's pushed out there is not going to be potable? I thought it was going to be...
No, I'm sorry. It is.
Okay, it's not directly out of the river. It's processed. Potable water.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
So my question, it's not a dollar match with the state. Is it a percentage match with the state
necessarily?
They just
make me participate, and it's
no,
up to the state. There's no set amount, but they just have to have local participation, or they won't do their
the
incentives.
The state match.
Because I guess their thought is if you don't care enough about it to do something yourself... Why should the state, you know, do something?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea how long span? Is it going to be 5 years, 10 years, 20 years?
You know, 10 years is 10 to 15 is probably the most common ones that we do. Some are as short as five. But I would guess this one's probably going to be about 10. If I were to guess, and believe me,
mm-hmm.
this is just a guess at this point because we haven't been able to crunch all the numbers. We're doing that right now with the help of Zions Bank Public Finance. I would guess 10 years would be the likelihood. And we probably won't do 100% for 10 years. It'll probably be 75% or something in that neighborhood is my guess. Again, I'm just guessing at this point. I have not.
But it'll be in the agreement.
Yeah.
And
that's
we'll
all
going to
be spelled out in black
month.
And white because without that agreement, we don't
right.
get the money.
We
and then, you know, that's that agreement will spell that out. And then that will direct the payment of that tax increment to the agency.
Great.
Super exciting.
Well,
yeah.
good for
another question. This is another guess probably, but how many on other projects that are similar, how many kids does this bring into our system?
That's a good question because obviously that's your business is to educate kids, and if you have more kids,
that's true.
You know,
you're exactly right.
100 jobs, school-age children. I don't know. I'm sure there's some demographic we could figure that out. The nice thing is, obviously, I imagine there's got some capacity in the schools out there. And the nice thing is also, you know,
tripled.
And you guys understand funding of schools a lot better than I do, but you get money per pupil. And the money you typically use for property taxes to build facilities, and I think you're a ways away from needing to build a new facility.
Yeah.
You know, places like Alpine, and I'll be very frank, Alpine District is very, very cautious about doing projects because they've had so much growth
there.
Yeah. And their approach is, geez, if you bring
that's
in another business, it's just
right.
going to bring in more kids, and we're going to have to educate more kids. It's like it's to
we're
them
on
it's
the
like
other
play.
Spectrum
and,
of that.
Yeah,
right.
we're on the other
we're
spectrum.
Not on that
so,
spectrum.
And that's that. How the Alpine District views it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry they do, but that's how they do. And
understandable.
What is the capacity of the schools in Green River?
Well,
they were overbuilt to begin with. I know that.
I think Buckcliff, you're probably looking 200 to 250.
So we can.
And your Green River High School.
Preschool right now, right.
Green River High School, you know, we do have some classrooms probably that aren't fully utilized, but
right.
Both of them would be very similar as far as student body
yeah.
capacity
yeah.
total,
yeah.
but. 250 would crowd Green River High School
double.
Pretty
yeah.
pretty tight. We may have to
yeah,
look at
like
that.
We'd like to be crowded.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, would.
But to answer that question also, yeah. that right now with the coal problem we're having, mines shutting down, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of it's going to be local.
Right.
So they may not move, so it may not increase much right now.
We could probably put 500 at Buckcliff if we had 50 in a class.
Oh, that would be really, really good idea.
Just hauling a few more trailers.
Well, it'll probably help all areas.
Is there plans for new housing? Or?
Yes, and that's why we're excited to have something a little bit smaller come in than the nuclear plant,
mm-hmm.
because there's going to be 3,000 to 5,000 workers. You know, building it for 5 or more years, and then supposedly 1,000 permanent employees. So, yeah, we're going to work. We are working on doing that as well.
So that will be inside the city, not near the...
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
But we're only 7 miles away.
Yeah.
If that.
Where is this at?
That's about 5.
Six comes up?
West of Green
okay.
River.
It's west of Green River.
North of
the
Green
and
River.
And as you head up the
that's
hill...
True. That's
before you come
no.
down 6,
no.
right
it's
in that area,
70,
okay.
on the east side of
the
6,
tracks
and,
the
yeah.
and south of the highway, I mean south of the railroad.
Okay.
So it's kind of, their property kind of goes like this, so the railroad will come on this side of the property, and all their buildings will be closer to the railroad.
Okay.
Well, obviously it's not taking away anything
no.
from our funding, and it has the potential to
right.
help immensely
yeah.
in the future.
Exactly.
Yes, it gives hope to Green River and the rest of the county, and so the whole area. Thank you for your presentation.
Great. Thanks for having me. If you have any questions, I left my card, or you can have, you know, send me an email. I'll be happy to try to answer any questions you have. And then, like I said, we'll just coordinate things. Hopefully, we'll be ready at the next meeting. I can't guarantee we will because we're still gathering information, but that's our plan, is to be ready to have something solid to present. Again, we just didn't want to catch you cold with it the first, you know,
appreciate that.
In one meeting and say, you know, approve this brand new concept. So
we appreciate the explanation.
Yeah. Thanks. So thanks for letting me come, and I'm gonna head home.
Thank you very much. Be safe.
Surely you jest.
We have Dana Terry with Comprehensive Guidance Program.
Thanks, Greg.
Oh, wait a minute.
That's Green River.
It is Green River.
You want that guy?
Yeah. Next month?
Yeah. It's in Green River
next
month.
Well, that works out.
March in Santa Fe.
Yeah.
March in Santa Fe.
Green River next month.
March
in Santa Fe. Thank you.
Where were we last time? High school or elementary? I think it's a high school. I think we're in the elementary last time.
It's at Buckcliff.
Oh. Oh, the elementary.
Is it next month?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, good.
Perfect. So I handed you out our comp guidance booklet. This is our evaluation that the state came in and did. We have 10 different standards that we had to go through. But I'm not going to go through all of it. because it would take way too long.
We do know how to read.
If you want
to
flip,
we can read it.
To page number 32. On there, that has the overall recommendations of kind of our program. The most important thing to know is we did pass our program. So
yes.
So that's
kudos.
That was a very big plus for me this year.
I thought it was a relief.
Congratulations.
Yes. One of the recommendations is we need to do a little bit better job at setting our goals and letting, obviously, our stakeholders know what our goals are. So on the next page, I have our department goals that we have set this year. We have some short-term goals. The first one is I wanted to start a girls counseling group during lunchtime. Once a week for 8 weeks. I haven't been able to do this, and I might not be able to get to this goal this year, just because I've been a little swamped lately. The second one is the counseling office. We want
Nick,
to really...
You gotta turn one more page.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. I really want to promote the CTE programs, the career and tech education programs that we have at the school. And so this year, me and Ashley, we sat down and we decided that we wanted to give away 3 scholarships for any pathway completers. Because right now, those pathway completers, they just kind of get a certificate. And so with the help of the CTE teachers, we'll decide which students get those. It'll just be $100, but we wanted to bring some more support to those programs. Our third goal is our FAFSA applications. This is important for any student thinking about any post-secondary pursuant of their education. They measure it by cycles. Last cycle was the 14-15. We had 43. We want to increase that to 60. And by doing that this year, we're offering a Money Smart Spartan Scholarship. It's going to be worth $500, and in order to be able to get that scholarship, they have to apply for 2 other scholarships, and they have to fill out their FAFSA application. We were able to do that with some of our counseling money, as well as Mr. Davis said that he would help support that goal with some and help pay some money towards that. Our long-term goal is we really want to expand the CTE programs. We would love to offer computer engineering and computer application classes. So I handed you a separate sheet. It says successes. If you want to look at the bottom, this year we did a survey to see how many kids were interested. We surveyed 235 students. 39 of those students, and this is both a male and female students, said they were interested in a computer programming class. 51 is very interested in an application design class, so all the fun apps that we have on our phones or iPads. And 45 are interested in Java certification. The most important, too, is with the state, they like to give lots of grants if we can focus specifically on our female students, and we have 32% of our female students say that they were very interested. So that is something I would like to look towards, you know, towards the future, especially with kind of our industry, our main industry, coal, which is kind of dying right now. Computer programming is a great career because you can do it anywhere. So. And our kids are interested, and that's a hot field towards the future. So,
what is Java certification?
The Java is it is kind of the communication programming.
Computer language type.
Oh.
Yes.
Jeez, how do I not know that?
You probably have Java on your computer.
Yeah. And then our second long-term goal is ACT. That's becoming more and more important. And I want to focus on the special ed students and bring their scores as a cumulative, as a group, from 14 to 15 in the next 3 years. So that's kind of our long-term goals, especially just starting to give them more opportunities for college and career readiness. So just to talk about some of the other successes that we've had this year. This year, this fall, we were able to offer the statistics class. We had a lot of students that needed an additional math class for Regents.
Mm-hmm.
I had 8 students enrolled that all passed that statistics class. I was really proud of them for that. Spring EdNet, so this is what's going on right now. I was able to get a Math 1050 class. I have 19 kids enrolled in that right now. Philosophy, I have 2. Psychology, I have 5 students enrolled in Mass Communications 1. So I think that's a good indicator that our kids are pushing themselves, they want to be challenged, and I would like to see more classes brought into Emory High, either through USU, Eastern, or SNO, and we will continue to work towards that. Concurrent enrollment, I have 22 students enrolled in auto. Our BCCM, which is our cabinetry and construction classes, I have 12. Our CAD drafting, we had 23 students enrolled in that. Our English, 1010, 59, and physics, we have 41 students. So once again, our kids are wanting to be challenged. Other successes, I have 19 students that graduated early and this January after second term ended. Some of those I think were good. A lot of those students, I don't think, you know, they really were quite ready. They didn't like graduate and step into college. So there, you might want to consider raising the graduation limit. Right now we're at 24, but that might be something we want to think about doing in the future. So I had 19 kids apply for the Regents Scholarship, which is up. Last year I had 8, so 19 is a great number. Last year the state required all the juniors to take the state ACT. We had 150. There was only one junior that was unable to take that, and they all did very well on that. And then just currently we will be starting SCOPs and CCR meetings with parents. Those will start on January 21st and run into February. So that's kind of what our counseling department is doing. So do you have any questions?
Yeah, I do. Do you have any idea of what the graduation rate is in the school?
Our graduation rate is, we're at like 93%. So we only have, which I try to figure out how the state, because most of our kids graduate, there's one or two that sometimes fall through the cracks, but it's very high for the state, and we did get compliments on that.
It's typically 97-98%, but the state changed their way of calculating that just this last year, and we're all a little confused on how they do it now, but it drops statewide because of the formula they're using now, but it doesn't necessarily actually reflect just the number of students.
How can it be a variable?
It's a formula that they have now.
Sometimes when they move
either
away,
do or you don't.
Either
do
or
either
don't,
you
right?
Graduate.
It's the kids who are out that don't go into another school, don't enroll in another school.
They're counted against us,
really?
And considered a dropout, and they're not even in school. But they haven't enrolled in another school, so they're not dropped from our school. And it's recalculated in a different form with a different formula. But of the students that we actually have in school, it's probably close to 98%, I would guess, or
about that high.
Good.
Well, thank you for that, and
I'm
glad to see some concrete numbers that we can look at next year and see how close.
A little further down on the agenda, under D number 3, the board does need to accept the report of the comprehensive guidance and approve the continuation of our comprehensive guidance program. If you want to move on that now, right after the report, rather than waiting and having them wait.
Yeah, I'll make that motion right now.
Okay.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
And thank you for your
thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Thank you, guys. We also got a new counselor, Ashley Jensen, who is Jed's daughter-in-law, but she just had a Q cute little baby girl, and so.
The New Year's baby.
She's out on maternity leave, so I wish she was back.
I bet you do. Hurry and come back.
I'm glad to have her.
That's
and out
great.
Of sympathy, Jed's probably going to have another shoulder surgery. Just
oh, well, good.
Every time he has a grandchild, he has a shoulder surgery, so it's just kind of.
Tradition.
It's not working. we have the Upstart Grant with Nanette Harrison. We're glad you're here, Nanette.
Well, we're moving from high school down
to
preschool.
Oh, wow. Here we are, the other end of the spectrum.
Yes, we are. This is just a flyer that I take around town and to the libraries and schools and every place just to let parents know that there is an online preschool that's being offered. Just a little bit about Waterford. They are based out of Sandy, Utah. And they have been, they're a nonprofit education research organization. They've been designing educational software and programs for young learners for more than 37 years. So they know their business. So. And last year, they submitted a major grant to the U.S. Department of Education, and they got it. So part of this grant, they were able to invite 18 rural school districts to participate in this online program. And Emory County is one of them, so we're excited. And with this, so they're having a study, and they're going to be following the children that will be going to kindergarten this year, 2015. So right now, the children are doing the preschool. And with the study, half of the children are doing math, science, the other half are doing the reading. We have 76 children enrolled, preschoolers enrolled. And
in our district.
In our district.
In this program.
Yes.
And are they about evenly split?
I can tell you, I have like, in Cleveland, there's 11 preschoolers. Huntington, there's 13. Cassadell, there's 16. Cottonwood Elementary, there's 11. Farron, there's 17. And Green River, there's 7.
Great.
And I have a list of who's who and what they're on, you know, reading and math, and I'll be getting those to the principals and to the kindergarten teachers. So
who decides whether they do reading or math?
The people that are in charge of the grant, they're out of California.
Okay.
And so, and it was the computer that picked.
So it's just
random.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they just work.
That would be interesting to have that
yes.
information.
And the parents that I've talked to, well, what they do is on this program, the parents are committed to do it 5 days a week, 15 minutes a day.
Mm-hmm.
And Waterford will send out weekly emails to the parents and also the progress if they're keeping their 15 minutes a day, 5 days a week. During the holidays, it kind of slipped, which is normal, you know. So, but anyway, but the nice thing about this program is like they're doing it right now, and then in August we will have a graduation for each of the schools and the children and their parents, and then they will go to kindergarten, and then the summer of kindergarten, first and second grade, they'll pick the program back up,
mm-hmm.
so they won't get those summer slumps, and it's just for this study. So the children, I am starting to enroll children for the 2016 school year. They will have the whole Waterford. They will have the reading, math,
oh, that's good.
And you know, and science like that. So, Waterford is concerned about, since it is a at-home online preschool, about the children's preschoolers' what opportunity to socialize with other children their age. So we've had a Halloween party. We'll have a Valentine's party.
Oh.
We'll have story hour at the public libraries for them to socialize with peers of their own age. So, and then Waterford, they've been able to expand the Upstart program in the rural communities, and they want to maintain this presence, so they're going to be up to the state legislation asking for more money, so they can be offered, continue to be offered in rural school districts. The nice thing about Waterford is if you do not have a computer that's or internet, they offer that free of charge.
Mm-hmm.
They just want the children, and especially the rural children, to succeed, have a good start in kindergarten. And the parents that I have talked to, they're just excited. the children that are on the reading end of it, they are just taken off in reading. The children that are on the math, Waterford kind of had a struggle with starting out the math. So Waterford sent all the children that were math, science, just things to enhance the math part.
Wow.
So they want the children to succeed. And that is why they really stress that the children do it 5 days a week, 15 minutes a day. So, but that's...
And this is a cohort group that will go, like say, Nana says, will be tracked all the way
for
through.
For 7 years.
Right now, it's basically a year long, and then it'll be summers up through about after their second grade going into third. And then they want to assess the kids and compare them to the kids who have not been through the same intense program to see if it's making a huge difference and whether it ought to be basically implemented statewide. It's our basic, you know, it is really that there is some support at the legislature because they want to find effective programs that can be funded statewide for those core areas. And so it is a study, although I understand they're looking at a second cohort.
They are.
That is mentioned that they can look at too.
So one of the questions I have, is it exclusively available to children who are not enrolled in preschool otherwise?
No.
It's okay.
It's for every child.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
We even have a couple of Spanish-speaking children
that are
enrolled in Huntington.
It's got to have a benefit in our schools.
Oh, it does.
It just
has
to. It's so great. Mm-hmm. That's so exciting.
That will be fascinating.
That little gap that
Yes, it will.
Yeah. Great. Well, thanks for all that you do, Nanette.
I would just like to mention, as the supervisor
sure.
of this program, Nanette Harrison.
Oh, yeah.
I'll bet she does.
Yeah, we all know Nanette.
Yes.
Yeah,
she spent a lot of time in Cleveland trying to find all the kids.
I'll bet.
My granddaughter participates in this.
Oh, and great.
I have a grandson in it.
Really
doing well, huh?
She's done a really good job.
Thank you, Nanette.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. We have the consent agenda, the warrants, the minutes for December 2014, and the financial reports for December 2014. Any questions on that?
You better not have, because the guy that can answer them left.
Oh, okay.
I had a question, but I had it answered. So
okay.
I move that we approve them as they've been presented to us.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Personnel actions, names for approval.
Okay, we have two, but they're not the same ones that I've given you previously. We actually had someone hired and they quit today before they got approved. They hadn't really started. So you have it, it's now on your report that I have there. I'd like to recommend that the board approve Stacy Mason as occupational therapy assistant under special education. We've had, John can explain it better, but we have had a contract with a local occupational therapist. They have been unable to keep consistently people in place, so that contract has moved to Castleview Hospital, and they have hired, they have an occupational therapist, physical therapist that will come in occasionally, and have this assistant will be working 3 hours a day throughout the district with those students who need those services under special education. So it's not we're spending new money, it's replacement of the contract that we had. That's
so
a poor way of explaining it, but I think
right.
it got the gist, Joan.
Yeah.
It's
and we'll do
it's
both
quite
of them
a complicated
at the same time.
Story, but. And then also Stacy Moss as a bus driver on a regular bus route. So I would recommend the board approve those two hires.
Okay.
I'll make a motion that we approve them as you have given them to us.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed?
Is the contract with Castleview then, is it a yearly renewal?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, we have request for overnight travel, junior high honor choir.
Now this is annually
mm-hmm.
their honor choir. They have 8 students participating, 5 from Santa Fe and 3 from Canyon View. They will be traveling to Orem Lake Ridge Junior High on January 30th and then on to Salt Lake City on January 31st. Heidi Hill and Jennifer Favre will be the chaperones, Heidi being the choral director for this and Jennifer the accompanist. So I'd recommend the board approve this activity, which they have done every year. So
I move that we approve it.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Approval of water share leases for 2015.
Water share leases need to be approved every year, and Jared indicates that there are no changes.
Okay.
It's the same as year. There's not going to be any changes in it, so recommend approval of the water leases to those communities that are currently leasing.
I'll make a motion that we approve the water leases.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? A request for unpaid leave.
You know, under policy this year that we implemented on unpaid leave, we have an individual who has requested unpaid leave. Jackie Wilson has to have a total knee replacement. She has no sick leave left at this point, but she does not qualify for the family medical leave because she doesn't work enough hours. And is currently not in the catastrophic pool that we have as far as sick leave. We have a precedent on this in previous years with surgery, a similar surgery. She will be gone from January 27th through March 1st. It's about 8 to 10 weeks, but it's unpaid leave. We'll probably need to have a sub in there. Mm-hmm. But with the precedent that's been set, I'd recommend the board approve this unpaid leave for Jackie.
Okay. I move that we do approve that.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? We have the principal's report.
Before we go to Brian, John, I've asked
John
if he would talk to you a little bit about Title I, because Brian's report, I'm sure, is going to include some information that we've shared before. But if that's okay with the board, we'll have John give an introduction to Title I.
So I have sat on board similar to this one, the public health and mental health, for 20 years. And staffers would come in and want to describe to the group XYZ program, and we'd all look, oh yeah, I know all about XYZ program. I really don't know about that. And to some degree, I'm sure some of you might be wondering, what exactly is Title I? So I thought I'd take a trip down memory lane and describe Title I that I've been in charge of. I think I started in 850 BC.
About the time you and I started.
About the time.
And then progressed through, and then it's a nice segue through. So when I took over the reins way back when, under Reggie Gelfinder, one of my assignments was Title I. And during that first year, I spent most of my time doing all of the paperwork, which I thought was voluminous at the time, ha ha ha. And eventually did make my way out into the schools and did some observations about how Title I works. Under the direction of the principal at the time, there were aides assigned as Title I aides. And they did a variety of tasks like bulletin boards, supervising the lunch lines out on the playground, and occasionally they did some work with the students. But what I noticed was there was very little consistent supervision and tutorage on the part of the staffs, and they did vary from school to school in terms of how that operated. So it became my goal to perhaps change the way that service was delivered in schools. Visited with some of my colleagues over the course of the next 2 or 3 years, and spent some time with my dear friend in Nebo School District, and visited his program, and decided that program was a good way to go. And essentially what we ended up doing was hiring a teacher coordinator that supervised those particular para-aides in each of the schools, interfaced with the principal and the teachers. And this has become an excellent, I think a very successful delivery of services in the schools. Before that time, the principals, it was just another program. They had many to do. They weren't quite sure how that all worked. And it has turned out to be an outstanding service model that we've employed in all of our schools. So while we're going to celebrate Farron tonight, I want to also mention that we really should be celebrating Brookcliff and Huntington, who also follow that model, but perhaps didn't arrive at the same level. Statistics wise, and I'm best finding my glasses because I won't be able to read this. Somewhere my glasses are over there. Told you, 50 BC. Over the course of the last 3 years, we've had both Huntington and Farron recognized as highly effective Title I schools. Most recently, Brian's going to share with you the high honor that we've received this year for Farron. But let's also look at some of the challenges that the other schools have in terms of demographics. For example, at Booklet, they have a percent of income, low income, as measured by free and reduced lunch, at 79%. Hmm. Almost 8 out of 10 kids there are eligible for free lunch. Hmm. In terms of ethnic diversity, 65% Hispanic. Wow. So, you know, a large number of English language learners down there. Huntington at 54% free lunch and 15% Hispanic. Farron has the second highest school lunch measure of poverty at 61%. But they have 99% white English-speaking students, around 1% Hispanic. I think that's like 2 or 3 kids. So there are some challenges in those other Title I schools, and yet they were able to receive typical scores of other schools, other elementary schools, without that challenge of those kids. So there are some differences there. I want to mention way back, part of this formula of doing this service delivery involved making sure that the teacher coordinator that I selected was one of the most outstanding in the school. So I went about the task of cherry picking from the principals, their very best staff. And Sam will remember a lady by the name of Wendy Hodson. Mm-hmm. She was my first Title I teacher coordinator. She shared between Farron and Huntington. And then as she moved on and went up to Davis, I then cherry-picked yet another obvious candidate, which would be Mrs. Roper. And so she's taken over that position. And then one of the ladies who worked here for a while, Jennifer Mortensen, taking over the Huntington position. And then Marcy Vettieri down at Green River, and that, in my opinion, has led to the reason why we're so successful. They provide monthly in-service training. They're great at interfacing with the staff. It's that part that the teacher, that the principals greatly appreciate. And as Tom Walzer said, he just wouldn't know what to do without having Jennifer there at his side to do that. So that's kind of a segue into, I'm sure, what Brian's going to talk about. We're very, very, very pleased about having this award for a school. That's a hard thing to achieve, yeah. And we're thankful for that. So that's my march down memory lane, and my part
is the director.
Did you really start with Archie Kinder?
I certainly did.
Oh, gracious.
I started before that.
You've trained a lot of people, haven't you?
Yes. I was in high school.
I was in kindergarten.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, you'd be.
I was here before John. I'm pre John era.
In the district, you just call it PJ.
Pre John.
Before we go on to Title I, just as you walk through the halls, you may notice that there's some brightly colored papers with questions on it. Just to kind of clue you in what those are, is tomorrow's our school geography bee.
Oh.
And so to help prepare everyone and to keep it a real active kind of thought process, we like to have our walls interactive for the students. So several of the questions are placed around the school as the kids are lining up for lunch. They're quizzing each other. They're checking their memory. And it just becomes a nice interactive way of reinforcing that for a couple months prior to the first ones go up just after Halloween. And tomorrow will be the big finale. And you're welcome to come join us, our younger grades. Do a geography bee, and they'll start at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, first through third grade, and then at 1 o'clock. I knew one of them was a 30, and one of them was was straight up, and I didn't want to mix it up. But at 1 o'clock, we have our upper grades will compete. Traditionally, in the past, Well, as part of the if you're the school champion, you get the opportunity to take the National Geographic National Test. And over the years, we've had two or three that have passed that and qualified to go to the competition at Thanksgiving Point on the statewide level. And it's been a fun opportunity and program. We're really thrilled to have that in our school and for the work. And many, quite a few years ago, our teachers recognized that there was a need to share this with our lower grades. And so the questions are more formulated towards local geography, mm-hmm. local history. You know, it might have something to do with the petroglyph or dinosaur footprints or some of the, just our local features. And so kind of some fun questions and a great experience. But to move on to the Title I designation, in order to schools qualify for Title I funding, and it's a federal program. John gave you the details and descriptions about how you qualify, and it's a wonderful opportunity to be able to have this, to provide the extra services to help meet some of our low socioeconomic status students. And so right before Christmas break, received a phone call and an email. Superintendent had forwarded an email and then a phone call saying that our school had been selected as a distinguished Title I school to represent the state of Utah. Every year, for about the last 7 years, we've received either a box or a package or a letter or something that's had a certificate that said, congratulations, your school is a high-performing Title I school through the State Office of Education, which when I got the email, I thought that's what it was, and oh, well, this is great. We're another great year, and because of the great credit of our incredible Title I program and our teachers that work in great tandem together to really provide incredible services. Then we read a little deeper into it. When the phone call follow-up of congratulations came from the national organization, I realized I probably had skimmed that email just a little too fast. And what it entailed was that each, through the National Title I Association, every year they select two, in working with the state offices of education for each of the 50 states, they look at the test results and the information and the performance of the students and select two Title I schools per state to be identified as distinguished Title I schools to represent the state of Utah. And it's our privilege this year to be identified as one of those distinguished schools.
And as a reward, they get to invited to the National Title I Convention.
Yes.
Wherever it's held, and guess where it is this year?
Salt Lake City.
We won a trip to Salt Lake City.
That's fantastic.
And so, in mentioning to Stephanie, we were really hoping this year we were high performing status, and that maybe next year we could hit that distinguished and go wherever it is.
Well, it means that more of their staff can attend. So.
We're able
That's
to take
true.
Eight people
true.
With us to represent our school, and we made it available to all of our Title I paraprofessionals to be able to join us up there. And seven of them were able, six aides, Stephanie, and we're also Heather Bailing, who does Title I in our preschool programs, will be joining us up there. One of the drawbacks to being the host state is there's a in the opening ceremonies, they recognize each of the schools, and the state of Utah, as the whole state, gets to lead the parade. So we're
wow.
Stephanie's working on her baton twirling.
Good, good. Send some pictures.
Don't know what that means, but anyway,
fantastic.
So the other school that was identified this year is from Alpine School District, and so to be a smaller school
mm-hmm.
in a rural setting
is that's fantastic.
To be recognized.
That's awesome.
But really, the honor and the experience of all of this really goes to the hardworking teachers and Title I aides. One thing that John hinted around, I guess, he did identify it in hiring Stephanie and the Title I coordinators. do an amazing service. And I would have to say that with our aides and our schools, their qualifications, their understanding, and their training is top notch. They are, in my mind, they're not necessarily professionals or aides. They're intervention specialists, where they're able to work with teachers and when we hold our staffing meetings and really identify the needs of our students, we're able to sit down all together and say what is the growth and what's happening with our students and what do they need. And it's so amazing that so many times the aides are able to look at that and say, okay, based on that need, I have these tools in my toolbox that we can do to help assist the teachers with those frustrations or those challenges. And that teamwork atmosphere is something that it makes this type of recognition, a school-wide recognition, and an honor for everyone, because it takes, I'm convinced, it just takes everyone working together to really take those especially hard cases who struggle and to be continually pushing them to meet their full potential, to make whatever gains and growth they're capable of, and not being content to just give them a label and set them aside and say, well, you know, if they didn't have X, Y, and Z excuse, maybe we could help them. But being able to work with each student to the best of their potential. And
also, you know, this way this is set up also provides the opportunity for some really good professional learning community activities, because you have the staff and personnel that you can bring a group of people together to talk about individual kids, meet their needs, and talk on a regular basis as a team. The other thing you may not know, and maybe you do, we may have talked about it before, is that these educational assistants who work in Title I schools are required to have an associate's degree or equivalent, or pass a rigorous content area para-pro test. And it's not, you know, an easy test to pass. It's a content area test, so that they have competency in the reading and math areas. So these are specialists who have some real skill to help us out.
Well, and I tell you, when you work with elementary teachers, you learn very quickly that there's a great love that they have for every one of those little kids, and they're committed. And they're going to lose sleep over the one that's not making gains. We have the same commitment from our aides that sometimes they're just too busy to take a restroom break when they really need one, because those kids need them. And that commitment is something that it amazes me as I watch school-wide the great atmosphere and In developing those professional learning communities. Several years ago, Stephanie and I and Loretta sat together. We went through some ideas, and how can we problem solve and solve some of the problems we're seeing? How can we get our aides working more effectively and efficiently? And it's been sitting and problem solving together that we're able to share ideas, we're able to solve problems, and really, I think I know. Tom, when Wendy mentioned she was going to move, he was all ready to retire, and I don't think that he had any less of a relationship with Jennifer, but I know I depend on Stephanie a lot, and I appreciate, you know, the great work that each of the ladies that are here and those that are not here, that they do every day to make life wonderful. We started out the school year with a theme. I was able to go to a training, and we watched a DVD that part of it had to do with a wheelbarrow, and over there we've got the pop in a wheelbarrow. But the speaker, his theme was along the lines of, "Do you have room in your wheelbarrow for, you know, that little kid that comes in dirty, with a dirty face and maybe smells a little because their water was shut off?" And he went through, "Do you have for that ornery parent that just worked a double shift so that they could, because they're a single parent and they're doing the best they can, do you have room?" And we talked about that as a faculty a little bit, but also so many times my faculty and staff, I've kind of twisted a little bit of the wheelbarrow of who can we put in our wheelbarrow and help lift and carry. And there's so many times that they've just lifted and carried me through, and I just appreciate everything that each of them do, because these types of recognitions, you don't apply for them, you don't even really know they're out there, but it sure is exciting when great hardworking people, when others can look at the work that they do and recognize the quality. So thank them, and thank each of you for being here with us today. We love hosting you, and congratulations to our two return appointees and on another term. And do you have any questions for me?
I don't think so. We just really appreciate the work that you do here. It shows year after year, and you can tell that you care about the students and that you go the extra mile. It's just very much appreciated in the school district, because it is about kids, and it's about making them succeed and helping them in their struggles. And thank you so much, all of you. We have the business administrator's report. He doesn't have anything?
He had to leave, so
okay.
He's giving you what he needs.
Okay. Superintendent.
Recognizing that we've had a lot of reports, I'll try to be brief. I just want to mention I've included with my report a copy of the governor's education recommendations. You've probably had three or four copies by now.
Mm-hmm.
But the governor has to submit every year at the beginning of the legislative session a recommendation on budget. And I remember a legislator telling me at one time that the process is the governor submits a recommendation, they throw it in the garbage, and then sometime about the end of the session, when they run out of ideas, they pull it back out of the garbage and see if there's any good ideas on it. So, but to Governor Herbert's credit, he is recommending a 6.25% increase in the WPU. That's the largest increase in 25 years. And then you'll see a number of other things that are on that budget. So it is quite a bold move. Talking with some of them on the executive appropriations, they're not quite that optimistic, but that's their job, is to downplay until they get the actual numbers in. But they're anticipating, with the economy the way it's been, a hefty increase in revenues. There are some bills right now that have been filed early. The legislature starts the 26th of January. There is a bill to increase the income tax from 5% to 6%, and that money to be used for performance pay and technology. There's also, as you recall, last year, a lot of emphasis on digital learning and technology. There was a huge one-to-one device initiative right at the end of the session, which, because of the funding and because there was no real consideration of the professional development required nor the software to go with one-to-one device initiatives, there was nothing done. But there is a huge desire on the part of the legislature to do something with technology. And there is a bill that's being filed that is $100 million of ongoing money to implement a technology initiative. The real concern is that would take about 4% of the governor's recommended 6.25% fund. So I don't know how far it will go. The governor's budget, basically what he's proposing, is about $30 to $56 million in capital outlay, a foundation program to help fund technology. The real problem is that in the Emory School District, we don't qualify for capital outlay foundation funding. However, if it was $56 million, we might get a little bit. But the lower the number, the less likely we will be to get it, because we have kept our tax rates quite low. And to be eligible for capital outlay foundation money, you have to be at the max on your tax rates and then have capital outlay needs that can't be met. So a little concerned about in both directions about that. There are some other bills there. There is one that would allow cities to authorize charter schools and assess fees to cover the oversight of those. And there are also bills being looked at that would include partisan elections for school boards. So those are some of the things you need to watch. Just for calendaring, the USBA School Boards Association Day on the Hill is February 20th. I spend almost every Friday at the legislature meeting with other superintendents and our legislative committee and our own legislators. And I'm sure that any board member who goes to the Capitol Hill any day of the week, you'd probably be able to visit with any of them. But we have had one major meeting with our legislators, had good discussion about funding and a lot of these other items that are early on. Bills have been filed, and I think we have some legislators in our area who are very education-minded and very supportive. So I think that's all I would report to you tonight.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any public comments? Do we have items for closed meeting?
No, we don't.
Okay, then a motion is in order to adjourn.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second that.
Smile.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you all for coming and sitting through this and supporting.
Yes, thank you.
Bills.
Thank you, those who presented to the board. Did a great job, and congratulations, Farron.
Yes, congratulations.
Yes.
Yeah. She's also a mentor for us, so she goes around and mentors different teachers.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.